The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Steve Bennett. He has a PhD from Stanford. That's pretty impressive. He's the principal product marketing consultant for the government at a company everyone knows called SAS, S-A-S. Good afternoon, Steve. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, John. Thanks for having me.
It's one thing to have a PhD, but a PhD from Stanford, I mean, I'd be bragging about that. I would have it on my business card and just tell all my neighbors and everything else. Pretty tough place to get that little piece of paper from, isn't it?
Well, it's not easy, but learned a lot. And as my wife tells me, you know, I'm a doctor, but not the kind that can help anybody. So,
well, you're going to have to help somebody today. You're going to help somebody maybe with understanding business analytics and some data problems. So we'll focus on that part of being a doctor, is applying that high brain power to helping my listener. Let me give you a profile of my typical listener, okay? I know them real well. Go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're told they have to do this. They've got to be secure. They've got to move to the cloud. They've got to analyze the data. There's IoT. There's new devices thrown at their desk. And by about 9:15, they're about to dial suicide hotline.
I can definitely resonate with that.
And so what I try to do is I try to bring in smart folks like you, and I get them in the studio and go, hey, toss us a bone. Give us an idea. I mean, what's your background? How can you help us? And maybe we'll get to 9:30 in the morning before we dial suicide hotline or something like that. And so that's why I brought you in here, because you have a pretty wide background. In fact, you have a strong background in data analytics, a strong background in the federal government. And perhaps you can take in and, you know, like a toss us a bone, give us a website, give us some ideas of how we can solve some of these quickly changing problems, and the staff is being reduced, budgets being reduced, and responsibilities are increasing. So it's kind of a tough situation. Steve, tell us more about your background, please.
Sure, you bet. You know, I started off life as a pure scientist, ended up getting a PhD, as you mentioned, but right in the middle of finishing my PhD in the biological sciences, 9/11 happened, and it really changed how I thought about how I could use my training in science for the good of the nation. And so just through some great connections, ended up working for the Department of Homeland Security for about 12 years, most recently as the director of the National Biosurveillance Integration Center in the Department of Homeland Security, and just recently moved to a new position here in SAS. And so my passion throughout my career has been, how can we use data? How can we use information for good? And I'm passionate about how we can use analytics and sound analysis to make the world a better place. I feel like I was able to do that along with my federal colleagues in Homeland Security, and I'm excited to be doing that now in SAS, helping those in the federal government do that better.
Now, it's one thing to understand big data when it comes to, let's say, AJ's Donut Shop, but this is bad things happen. I mean, this is serious business, isn't it? I mean, human beings' lives are at stake.
Oh yeah, it's real serious business, and if you've been watching the news at all over the last couple of years, you've seen kind of a steady stream of these emerging infectious diseases kind of showing up on our radar, whether it's SARS in 2003 or MERS coronavirus coming out of Saudi Arabia a couple of years ago, Ebola the last couple of years, and now our good friend Zika virus that's kind of dominating a lot of the headlines and a lot of what Congress is talking about here inside the Beltway.
We'll talk about those nasty viruses in a few minutes here. SAS, I was in North Carolina last year for a wedding. What a great place to be. No wonder the company started there in Florida. They can attract all kinds of people because, from my experience, young people want to move to North Carolina because they can buy houses. Great place, isn't it?
You know, it's a phenomenal place, and SAS is just a great place to be, as well as being in North Carolina. We're just celebrating our 40th anniversary just this year, and believe it or not, our very first customer 40 years ago was government, USDA and NIH, helping make sense of a ton of statistical agricultural data. So something we've been doing for government for a long time.
Academic background too, so the academic and kind of work with the federal government to solve problems. And looky here, 14,000 employees. Looky here, $3 billion in revenue. So SAS is a big player in this market, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you know, and has been for quite a while, four decades of pioneering behavioral analytics research and using those outcomes to help customers do whatever they do better.
Yeah. When I was in school back with Abraham Lincoln, we used to use these cards, and we'd submit cards to do our statistical analysis. And the next morning, we'd come back and go, oh, I forgot to put a period there, and have to submit them again for the next day. So I think things have changed in the last 40 years, especially when it comes to statistical analysis.
Boy, they sure have.
Yeah. That really sounds like a history lesson there, but that was actually true. That's what happened. So you have a wide background, and people know what SAS does. When I think of SAS, I think of analytics, maybe business intelligence, and maybe managing data. Kind of three pillars of the company. Is that what you agree with?
Oh, yeah. You know, SAS has a number of capabilities, everything from data management and data cleaning. That's often the first step before you can make sense of your data. You've got to be able to trust it and know that it's reliable. So data management, data cleaning, all the way to surfacing what that data is trying to tell you in terms of business intelligence or visual analytics. And then more advanced predictive analytics, things like machine learning and advanced artificial intelligence, in which SAS has a dominant market share. So everything from how do you get your data in shape so that you can even look at it, to just looking at what it's telling you, to where's that data telling you things are going to be going in the future. And so SAS kind of has a very strong bandwidth across all of those areas.
Well, I'm going to take this high lofty predictive analytics, and I'm going to go to the other end, down to the nitty gritty. I have a student from Nigeria, and what he wants to do is he wants to get a master's degree in technology management and go back to Nigeria and collect healthcare data. Mm. And I said, well, that's interesting, Chris. Why? Because we don't have any. And so what he wants to use is mobile devices, collect the data, and then with his predictive analytics, be able to work with public health. And so when we talk about public health and collecting data and big data, this isn't some, you know, textbook session with some professor in an ivory tower somewhere. No, this is really human beings, and we have data scientists that collect the data and can help human beings live.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I think that often we can think of analytics as a, you know, a Fortune 500 boardroom C-suite sort of activity that helps companies change their bottom lines. And that's certainly true. But the ability to know what's going on around you, understanding your data, and then being able to take actions based on that data is something that can change the world. And it can help people live healthier lives. It can save lives in the area of health. And it can help us understand what directions at a local level, state level, or a national level we might want to take in order to help protect our citizens and help them live healthier and safer lives. So I'm so glad you brought that up. Analytics isn't just something that sits in the boardroom. It's something that can help make the world better in terms of health as well.
I was talking to Damon Davis over at HHS, who runs the Idea Lab. Mm. And I said, well, what do you think about my student's idea? He said, well, they're doing it in India. They're doing it in many, many companies. The countries have the same exact problems, that there's not accurate data. And so he said, well, maybe we can connect them up with a grant. And so my student's excited because all of a sudden you get the government and academia and good outcomes result of all this. So it's great. A couple years back, I had Mike Olson in the studio here with a company called Cloudera. Mm. This is almost teeny tiny, and he was just thinking about this word Hadoop and this elephant, and it's gotten real popular. And so he works with big data, and now we know we throw that around and everything else.
Right.
So I'm going to toss it to you. You've got the big brain in the room here. So give us a little 2 minutes. What is big data?
So big data is defined as large amounts of information that is either so large or moving so quickly or so varied that it's difficult to use kind of standard statistical techniques that we might have used 20, 30, 40 years ago. So it forces us to use some more advanced, clever techniques, some of the things that you mentioned for data management and access, like Hadoop. So big data really is kind of a catch-all buzzword, really to mean that we've got a large amount of data, it's very different, so a lot of variety, and it can be moving very fast. And so ability to be able to get insights from that data is what we say when we mean big data. And analytics, we tend to think of analytics then as, well, what's the scientific process by which we can transform that data into insights for decision making? And that's really important because so often we just want to see our data. We just want to have a dashboard, and that's great. It's a first step. But the dashboard doesn't always tell us what decisions we might want to make based on what the data is telling us. So it's key to think of analytics not just as what's the data, but how does that data get transformed into insights that helps our customers or our nation make better decisions?
I'll give you my 5-word definition. Are you ready?
Ready.
Gonna need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's where it all started, you know, back in the day. Was this hard disk won't hold all this, and then let's connect them together and use an acronym for that. No, this won't hold all this, and then you get the guys at Stanford that connect them in big cloud environments, and And I think that's a good simple way. I mean, if I'm talking to my auto mechanic, that's what I'm saying. Hey, you know, I need a bigger wrench.
Well, you know, you're right. And we're if you look at all the analysts reporting, we are entering what they call the zettabyte era of data. By 2020, they're saying that we're going to have 35 zettabytes of data and that that data is going to be increasing by a factor of 50 every year. Your listeners have heard all these statistics, and it's something like 60 million times the amount of data in all the books in the history of the world ever written combined. So it's hard to fathom, but just tons and tons of information.
Zettabytes. Wow, that's the first time I've used that word on the radio. Let's take a break, hear from our sponsors, and come back, talk more about Zeta and data analytics and SaaS. Thank you. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon, we have Dr. Steve Bennett. He's a principal product marketing consultant for the government at a company called SAS, S-A-S. Everyone knows them. And if you want to get more information, I bet they have a pretty easy-to-remember website, don't they?
They do, just three letters, SAS.com.
And that's pretty good.
Not to be confused with the shoes or the airline, SAS.com.
Yeah, and so you can go there. And I was at the site this morning. It's a very easy-to-use site. It seems like it's been redone here in the last few months, mobile friendly. It's got a couple blogs there too. So can my listeners go to that site and read some information?
You bet. There's all kinds of great stuff there. And our corporate creative team is fantastic. They've got a number of blogs that you can hear from people like me around SaaS that are experts in different areas. One is called SaaS Insights, the other called SaaS Voices. So you can kind of check those out. You can also look at some of the ways that SaaS analytics is used to help the world around us. There's a lot of public health and a lot of other government examples of how analytics can be used to advance what those customers are doing. So lots of stuff there to read.
Well, before the break, we were talking about zettabytes, and I thought about Catherine Zeta something or other. So we're going to go from Zeta to Zika. So tell us about Zika. What is the Zika stuff anyway?
Well, as we talked about at the beginning, there's a lot of risk from these emerging infectious diseases kind of showing up on our doorstep. Zika virus in particular, it's fascinating, first discovered in 1947 in a rhesus monkey in Uganda, believe it or not, in Africa.
Wow.
And very, very small human outbreaks in the 50 years or so towards the end of the last century until 2007, when we started to see explosions of Zika virus outbreaks in people in French Polynesia, in the South Pacific. And then researchers believe that it showed up in Brazil in 2013. From an infected traveler that came from French Polynesia and then got bitten by a mosquito in Brazil. That mosquito picks it up, and then off you go. You've got an outbreak there in Brazil, which is, of course, heading our way. Mosquito season just around the corner here in the United States. So viruses, it's a little bit scary because it's mosquito transmitted, and that's why people get nervous about it, potentially sexually transmitted as well. And as we've seen in the news, high risk for birth defects and problems with ladies who are pregnant. So it's something to take seriously, but there's a lot we can do to help combat it and respond to it as well.
In fact, last week on Federal News Radio, they announced a White House initiative to respond to this, didn't they?
You know, yeah, that's right. If you saw in the news recently, the president is asking to redirect $589 million from Ebola over to Zika. And I think back in February, there's a request for $1.8 billion for Zika response. So we are certainly, at least here inside the Beltway, looking to do our best to get ahead of it and get ready for it so that we can respond effectively.
So I think from what I read, there was money that's going to be allotted for the CDC for response teams and then money going to NIH just for basic research. And they're going to do something clever because apparently they did so well with reducing Ebola, they can take and transfer that money to Zika, I guess.
Well, sure. There's so many different areas that you need to consider when you're trying to respond to something like this. And analytics can be helpful really across all of them. There's everything from prediction, early warning and detection of these things so that you can know as early as possible what you have going on, to response. How do we do mosquito abatement and dealing with some of the ways that this disease moves around, all the way to communicating with the public about what sort of signs to look for. And then, of course, on the public health research side, building that vaccine as quickly as we can. And as you know, that takes a while.
I gave a five-word summary of what big data is, and I'll give a three-word summary of your career. Solve difficult problems. I mean, that's what you do. I mean, and this is a difficult problem, especially piecing it all together. And there's a connection between Zeta and Zika, is that all this information is fine, but you got to connect the dots and reach conclusions that are actionable.
You bet. And it used to be maybe even 5-10 years ago in health that the challenge was, how do we collect a lot of data so that we can do something with it? And now the problem is, whether you're looking at Internet of Things and connected mobile health devices, electronic patient records in healthcare, we're swimming in data. And so now the question is, how do we make sense of it? How do we kind of do what we defined analytics to be? How do we take that data and transform it into insights for decision making? And lots of ways that works for Zika, using analytics, just sharing of information, surfacing data amongst agencies here inside our government can help us make decisions more quickly. So common standards and platforms for biosurveillance information and public health information around these viruses can help us do all of our jobs faster in the federal government. I'm sure many of my federal colleagues listening to you today would have a story about how it's difficult to share information inside the government. It's so big and we don't know kind of all of what's going on. So even just sharing information in a common platform, SAS and many other firms provide things that do that, is a solid way to get started in making everything work a little bit faster.
You know, I've heard that it's a very similar story, different group of people. I was at an event with a bunch of security officers from different agencies, including the military and the FBI and here and there. And there was an issue with sharing information. Mm. Now, it's just as serious, but the similar type thing is very serious information. And there's a wariness. And how do you share this safely? And how do you share this in an environment that is not going to compromise information, make sure it's still good, not sure there's no dirty data?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a large part of the effort in analytics benefits to healthcare outside of government, even in private industry, is around the area of reducing variation in care and making sure your records are consistent. And believe it or not, just spelling someone's name right in all the records so that you can track the care that they received is a big challenge, even in private industry. And so SAS has got a lot of activities, companies like AmeriHealth, where we're looking to help them do things like that, enterprise-level data management, so that the insights can come a little quicker with organized data.
So in biosurveillance, I imagine there are ways that you monitored circumstances. And in marketing, it's called M&M, measure and monitor. Mm. Imagine biosurveillance uses the same terms, measure and monitor, and try to look at all that healthcare data. And what we see is people are looking at, believe it or not, they're looking at Google for predicting what's going to happen with different types of public health issues, which seems so crazy to me, but they're doing it, aren't they?
You know, I love that you mentioned that. We had different terms for it instead of M&M. We had early warning and situational awareness. Those are some fancy bureaucratic terms for the exact same thing you just said. And so our job at NBIC was to figure out how quickly can we become aware that something anomalous, something out of the ordinary is going on. And once we've identified that, how well can we characterize how that event is changing, moving, tracking, all for the purpose of informing our senior leadership with those insights so that they can make decisions. With respect to Google, a lot of folks have had very clever, out-of-the-box ideas. What data sets can we look at to help give us a even earlier warning or better situational awareness? And so we pioneered a bunch of efforts there, and DHS and others have taken it further. Things like social media. Can you mine social media to find evidence of a health event, evidence of different symptoms that might let you know that something's changing in a population that might be geolocated? So you might know where you might see an outbreak starting if you use enough sophisticated analytics to be able to find that signal. And so in terms of early warning, it's all about being able to find that signal as early as possible. It's about time. And so all the clever data sets you can bring to bear, real-time analysis of EMS and 911 data, analysis of social media, analysis of emergency department data, anything we can think of that we can characterize with analytics, we will bring to bear to try to solve this problem and get us an even earlier sense that something's going on.
And this, you know, I drew the parallel with the cybersecurity area. But this applies to different areas of NIH, different areas of HHS. We had Dr. Kurt Heisler on here, and he talked about using big data to find out problems with kids and solving problems with kids before bad things happen. And you know, his background, he has a bachelor's degree in art. Mm. He wound up getting a master's in social work, and the problem he was trying to solve was children getting abused. And so he had these massive data sets, and he was trying to draw conclusions that could have actionable results for him. And so he had to use the analytical ability. But then there was a little graphical component too, which again, that's what we have to have today. This is a interesting new skill set for a data scientist.
Oh yeah, you know, humans are just not wired to look at pages and pages of numbers and make sense of it. So if you've got good ways to visualize data, and that's a big part of the field of analytics, so that humans can then do something with that intuition, it's huge. You know, given the example of children there, you know, SAS, I think a few years ago, looked at 6 million records of children across the state of North Carolina and derived a whole bunch of indicators for what would lead to potential problems in families versus good outcomes. And so all kinds of great opportunities like that. Wherever there's data, you can throw some of these tools and approaches at them to help help make the world better.
It's interesting that the skill set here that you've mastered is in the area of biosurveillance. But that school skill set, you could just take and move desks over to, you know, intelligence community, over to different parts of HHS. I'm sure people who manage the FEMA trailers trying to figure out where they all are and what's the most efficient use. And there's people who work with the Air Force on measuring fuel consumption. That's another big data problem there. And so SAS can fit in, okay, just take the tool and plug it in here, plug it in there, plug it, because it's very similar in many different areas.
You know, that's exactly right. If you think of the kind of classes of problems that we're looking to solve in analytics, one of them is, how do I find something in a big pile of other somethings? And whether that's detecting fraud in tax and benefits agencies, or whether that's helping to detect and identify crime and terrorism more quickly, finding something in a big pile of noisy data with high degree of confidence, high signal to noise, if you will, is a huge problem in analytics that we're starting to get our hands around.
Problem we have is we got to take a break. Let's take a break and come back, talk more about data analytics and working with databases to try to solve some problems. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Steve Bennett, Principal Product Marketing Consultant for the government at SAS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Dr. Steve Bennett, Principal Product Marketing Consultant for the government at SAS. Everyone knows SAS, SAS, down in North Carolina, big company, handle all kinds of problems. Now, people are listening to the show going, God, this guy's real smart. He's got all this experience. He's got this fancy degree and everything. Now, what does he read to stay real smart? And so that's my question to you, Steve. What kind of stuff do you read? Blogs? Do you read books? Well, what do you read to keep up?
Well, I try to read a lot of different things. Blogs, of course. It's great to see what people are doing. I read a great blog from a colleague at SAS last week about whether or not Steph Curry from the Golden State Warriors shoots better from his left or his right. So an amazing probabilistic analysis as to whether or not he's a little bit better from his left or his right. And so a guy at SAS wrote a neat blog. You can grab it on the website if you're interested. And so all kinds of neat stuff like that, clever and creative ways to apply data analytics. I read a lot of blogs inside and outside of SAS, read a lot of books about data analytics. So that's great. And just try to keep up with what's going on in the federal government as well. A lot of the same IT and technology newsletters that I bet most of the folks that are listening now read. I read those too.
Yeah, that's interesting, trying to keep up with things. I think that's real interesting, especially when I was listening to you, I kept thinking of the history of science and statistical innovation and how things have changed at the same time. It's so many things going on now in the world. It's hard to keep up. One thing that is going on is taking this data and analyzing. That's, you know, the baby. I guess collecting the data is the first, like my student over in Nigeria, collecting the data and then maybe analyzing the data. And then the next step is, let's put on our smart hats and do some predicting. So it's the fancy pants word is predictive analytics. That
right.
Sounds pretty impressive, doesn't it? So
mm-hmm.
Where would you use predictive analytics for biosurveillance?
That's a great question. It is a hard problem. If you have a series of data and you kind of understand how that data has behaved well in the past, it's a little bit easier in financial markets in some places. You can do a little bit of better job forecasting what might come in the future. That is really, really hard if you're going to try to predict the next outbreak of a new emerging infectious disease. But there is some great work that's going on. There are some groups at the U.S. Department of State, USAID, has a program called PREDICT that's looking to figure out where in the world we might see these disease hotspots jump up. And then just last year, a great scientific article in PNAS was written by a team, I think they were at Harvard, and they came up with a way using machine learning, an advanced artificial intelligence technique. They found a way to figure out what species of animals are most likely to have diseases that could jump to humans and start a new pandemic. It was incredible work that really is getting to where we can predict. If we can get a sense for where these diseases might show up around the world using machine learning and advanced analytics, we can get ahead of looking for them in those places to keep them from spreading all over the world. So lots of opportunities. It's a hard field, but lots of opportunities with smart people working on it inside the U.S. government and out.
Yesterday afternoon, I was at Bus Boys and Poets speaking to a bunch of 20 real smart guppies, and they actually gave me the podium for a few minutes. And one of the phrases I used was changes in attitudes, changes in latitudes. That's old men like me. That's from my generation. Mm. And okay, so we collected the data and it's good, clean data. Good, good. We analyze the data. Okay, we know what to do. And we can predict, okay, now what? I mean, what about obesity? What about tobacco? It's like, you know, we don't have to have any stinking predictive analytics for that. We know what's going to happen. But changing the attitude, that's the next step. And maybe with good numbers, it can be used to reinforce some of these bad choices that people make, and part of public health.
You know, that's a good point. We talk a lot about things like Zika virus and Ebola because they show up in the news and they're kind of scary. I mean, and rightfully so. But if you think about how many people die of the flu every year in this country, it's around 30,000 people. And
no
how many
kidding.
People? Sure, yeah, every year. And how many people die in car accidents every year? About the same number. And we tend to worry about these things that are that really aren't going to be anywhere near that level of consequences because they're different or scary. Whereas things like obesity, things like heart disease, those are the things that long term are going to cause much more of a consequence. And analytics has a large play there as well in health more broadly than just in these emerging infectious diseases. Knowing what sorts of interventions might work and then optimizing against those, that's another class of problems that analytics are geared for. If you have a set of things that you could do, which of them and in what sort of relative amounts get you the best outcomes? It's an optimization type of a problem. And so SaaS and analytics firms like us do those sorts of problems too.
I keep thinking because I think in black and white terms, well, this is a solution. No, maybe there's six solutions, and here's how we can prioritize those solutions. And giving this budget amount, maybe this solution B would be a better application. It gets to be a lot of subtle black and white gray. Who mm-hmm. can articulate the problem best? It's difficult. I told you, solve difficult problems. So you're the one who can do it, huh?
Well, we certainly try to move the ball down the field, and we work with a lot of other folks to do it. Our government agencies work very hard and are often at the forefront of a lot of these problems.
Can you give me a couple examples of where in the federal government they're used advanced analytics?
Boy, so many. As I mentioned, I think a couple of minutes ago in the broadcast, the use of analytics to help detect improper payments or fraudulent activity is huge across government. As I'm sure all of our listeners know, a lot of what the government does with its money is make sure that we take care of those that need help. So whether that's Social Security, whether that's Medicare or Medicaid, and anytime the government is going to be providing payments to people, there's an opportunity for somebody, a bad guy, to take advantage of that. And improper payments in the government is a big problem. I think to the tune of about $100 billion a year goes out that's fraudulent.
So that's with a B, right?
With a B. Wow. That's a factor of two over the budget of the Department of Homeland Security. And so that's not in no way criticizing my federal colleagues. They've got limited staff, limited resources. They can't possibly investigate all the bad stuff that people want to do. But with the right tools in their hands, they can help detect fraud using analytics. Which of these sorts of cases are most likely to identify somebody who's doing something that they shouldn't, and then stop that payment before it goes out the door, rather than trying to chase it later, which is, we can all imagine, is hard to get that money back once it's gone.
From a manager's perspective, if you have 15 employees that can spend 8 hours a day doing a job, what analytics might be able to do is prioritize what the best actions are during the day. And look, we're not going to expect you to work 20 hours a day in a 10 hours typical government day. Is that this is the top 10 list, but just do these four because this is going to be the most big fancy word, most efficacious for use of time.
You know, most government employees who are in a role where they're dealing with cases or case management, they're usually overworked. They usually have more cases than they can manage given the time and resources that they're given. And so what analytics can help them do is help point their limited energy in the right direction, the direction that's most likely to yield them the most benefit. Lots of examples, even at the state and local level, where we've helped Child and Protective Services in different counties around the United States keep people from having to call a bunch of different agencies to find out what's going on with a child that might be in danger. All that information gets rolled up and prioritized so that that social services worker can focus on the children that are at most risk. And the same thing's true in government with Social Security, with Medicare, with Medicaid, with the IRS, any sort of agency that has to deal with benefits or payment really could benefit from analytics to help them find those things better and do a better job stewarding taxpayer resources with the same staff that they have.
I'm thinking of different applications in the federal government. And then I just flashed back to when I was a young man. I used to crew on sailboat races.
John, you're still a young man. What are you talking about?
I used to crew on sailboat races. And what they do is they'd have one guy who just watch the little tufts coming off the sails and make strategic decisions based on that. And I'll bet there's people who have expensive sailboats that race them that use predictive analytics for different wind patterns and sail configurations. Because back in the day, you just get some old timer that'd have a feel, a sense for what to do. And that's all well and good, but you don't have time for that now. We have to make evidence-based decisions on something as simple as a sailboat or a hockey player or a football player.
You know, anytime you build a prototype for a use of analytics in a new area, you often have folks who say, well, I've done this for 20 years. I don't need this. I know what to do in my role. And that's great. Nothing beats experience in a lot of examples. But there's all kinds of cognitive science that shows that often the gut reaction is not always right. And so analytics can help you identify things that surprise you. And sometimes our best aha moments with customers are when we show them something in their own data that they didn't expect. Or that's important to them.
Well, Steve, we're going to get you in a taxi. We're going down to the National Stadium and sit with Dusty Baker and say, hey, Dusty, you can't wing it, buddy. But he sure won. He did a good job last week of bringing up a substitute. But sometimes it's not good enough, is it? I don't think it's dealing with huge amounts of numbers and fraud. You have to optimize the time in the office and the staff that you have.
Well, that's right. And analytics are, at least not at the moment, ever going to replace humans. What they do is augment our ability to do a better job with the time that we've got. So that human decision maker is still paramount. We just put more tools in their hands to solve the problem.
Let's take a break, come back, talk more about some of your personal technology decisions, talk about the future of SaaS. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today is Steve Bennett, Principal Product Marketing Consultant for the government at SaaS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Steve Bennett. He's the Principal Product Marketing Consultant for the government for SaaS. Everyone knows SaaS. Even John Gilroy can spell that. But let's talk about the website. Where can people go to get more information, Big Steve?
Well, it's SaaS, S-A-S, SaaS.
There's a PhD from Stanford. You got that one right? Yeah. So that's pretty simple. And blogs and articles and all kinds of, and a mobile-friendly website, too. Kind of easy to navigate. I think it's kind of a fun site.
You bet.
A lot of my students, a lot of my listeners are on Twitter. How can they learn about you on Twitter?
Great. I am at Analytic Steve. Just find me there, at Analytic Steve on Twitter.
Well, that's interesting. I guess we're going to find out if you're analytic or not, because I have a scientific 10-question test that I'm going to give you right now to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or if you're normal.
Oh, boy.
So the first question is going to be the easy one. Do you have an Instagram account?
Yes, John, I do.
How many cell phones have you bought for yourself in the last year?
For myself?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you count the one for SaaS, we'll say two.
It should be like every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do.
Oh, okay. And have you ever used Blab?
No.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have got an Apple iPhone 6 Plus. Looking forward to that 7 Plus this fall.
Yeah. And what's the most popular app on that bad boy?
Recently, it's been Waze, John. I'm sad to say, driving
You're
around DC.
Road,
I wish it were a little bit more exciting than that, but it's probably Waze.
So we break into your house tonight. How many tablet devices do you see floating around there?
Oh gosh, let's see. It's two of them. Both of them iPads.
Bump that up a little bit. When was your most recent post in the social networking site?
What was it, or when was it?
Your most recent one.
Most recent one was actually I posted in LinkedIn a couple of days ago about the three-dimensional structure of the Zika virus. So. Same sort of stuff we're talking about.
That's a serious one. And when is your Apple Watch due? Is it next week? Or
no,
it
I'm not an early adopter. I'm waiting for the second edition.
You're not getting many points here. Let's see if you can hit this last one out
All
of the
right.
park. The last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic.
Whew, we got some points here. I'll have to run this through my Apple II computer and print something out in a green bar and put it in the U.S. mail.
Green bar. Wow. That's some of your listeners are going to know what that is, but not most.
They've been thinking something with marijuana. No, it does sound like a marijuana variety. How about some green bar? That sounds good. We've talked about predictive analytics during this interview, and I'm just going to toss it right back to you, smart guy. So what is your prediction here for the federal government in getting a handle on this big data? I mean, you know, anyone can collect data. You can have IoT on anything. You get that fire hose and fire it up and have a whole barn full of data. But if it's not actionable, then you might as well get two barns full or something. So what's going to happen here in the government? Are they going to get a handle on this, or just going to be lost in the barn full of data?
Well, I'm an optimist, John, and so my predictions are always going to be that we're going to continue to get better, and so I'll echo that here. You know, I think that there's a couple of changes going on. Of course, all this data keeps piling up, but there's also some cultural changes too. It used to be even, you know, 5 years ago in some places in the government that, you know, some of these analytics approaches just really weren't all that welcome in agencies, and it was pretty foreign, and it's hard to install anything with an on switch in a government network and all of those challenges. And some of them still exist. But some of the cultural changes that we still have, that we still see going on in terms of more willingness to adopt analytics and some of these sorts of tools. And so I think that's going to continue. I really think the big sea change is we continue to be able to communicate to our government agency customers that using analytics makes them more efficient. You can actually do more with less money. You can be more effective at your mission. You can keep your airplanes in the sky a higher fraction of the time. You can detect fraud. You can do all those things more quickly and more efficiently by looking at the data that you already have. And so you can't think of investing in analytics and data management as sort of a sunk cost. You have to think of it as an investment that returns much more in terms of what you get back than what you spend on it. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot more data management, data cleaning in government, because a lot of government data is still kind of a mess. We're working on it. And then as we go into kind of the 10-year to 15-year time frame, I bet we'll see a lot more advanced machine learning and predictive analytics once we have our act together and just organizing and cleaning the data that we've got. Some agencies are already pretty far along, the intelligence community and some others, and some agencies are just getting started. But I believe 100% that we're going to see a lot more use of these tools just because it makes sense. Tightening budgets, tough problems, analytics is a great way to do more with less and make your mission more effective.
I keep bouncing back to Kurt Heisler, who was talking about his art degree and how that helped him understand big data. I mean, This is the communication problem. And I can remember green bar throwing on someone's desk and having people go through that and try to understand it. And today it could be a spreadsheet or it could be some kind of silly graph that, you know, I've seen business intelligence that is done by a second grader. It doesn't mean anything at all. I think there's a leap that has to be made forward in analysis. It has to be understanding how to graphically depict complex data in a way that can communicate or can advocate a certain change. I think, and there's a subtle skill there. There's not an obvious skill there. It's not a math skill. It's not an art skill. It's an analytical skill with a dose of something in there. I don't know what it is. Communication?
Well, you're exactly right. And you know, an art degree is not a bad thing to have in data science, because humans are built not to look at numbers and figures, but to look at patterns and to recognize patterns. The chief medical officer at SAS told me about a year ago that he was talking to, I think it was a radiologist who was trying to interpret something and had a bunch of data on a screen. And he said, well, this one here, when this pattern on the left starts to look like a horseshoe, then I know I need to take this action. I know that this is going on. So humans, whether they kind of understand or really can see that they're doing it or not, look for visual patterns and information and data. And so whatever we can do, whether it's SAS Visual Analytics or other sorts of tools that provide visual statistical or visual information, are just they're just essential. And that's for two reasons. One, it's because all humans are wired to look at things that way. And two, it allows analytics to be used by more than just the data scientist. If you've got an executive in government who's got 5 minutes before he or she's got to go brief the boss, if you've got a very compelling visualized piece of data, it can help them accomplish their objective more quickly. And you shouldn't always have to go to the data scientist or all of us nerds in the basement to kind of get your data. We really want to be able to democratize that data and make it so that the business owner, the program manager, can understand what the data is trying to tell them and how that data can help them, rather than just the technical staff. So visualization is critical for both of those reasons. I think you're exactly right.
A lot of students are using products like Tableau and Burst and looking at data sets and using that as a tool. Are there limits to that? Are there inherent superiority in with SAS for data visualization, or can it be supplemented with other products like Qlik and whatnot?
Well, so that's a great question, John. You can imagine what I'm going to answer. Of course, we think that SAS has got a lot of advantages. One of the things that SAS does that I think is kind of unique is it's really an end-to-end approach. And we mean end-to-end in terms of everything from the data management and cleaning to large scalability, in-memory processing and management of that data, to near real-time analysis of data as it's coming through, all in one place. And we think that there's a lot of tools that do a piece of that here and there, but SAS is kind of one-stop shopping across the whole life cycle for data analytics. We think that there's definitely some advantages in having one place to go for organizing your data as well as visualizing it.
I was talking to Govey yesterday about rapid response, and we were talking about rapid response with correspondence. And I said, well, what's rapid for you? And I said, well, you know, in the cybersecurity people, these talk about 0 day. And now if you identify a 0 day attack, that's 24 hours late. And so the idea of rapid response combined with data analytics visualization, all of a sudden, then you can do rapid response, can't you?
No, you bet. And you know, we all hear, your listeners, I'm sure, have heard of the Internet of Things and the connected devices. And, you know, that's great when you talk about your Fitbit or your Nest thermometer in your house. But these are real problems for government and industry that can be benefited by real-time rapid response as well. Things like SaaS event stream processing, which can help determine if an oil well is going to fail before it fails by monitoring the data coming out of it. So the ability to do rapid response is helpful across government, health, energy, banking, and the sorts of analytic tools that you can use to do all the things we talked about, predictive analytics, but do it on the fly as data streams in at scale. That's something that's cool. And we think that the Internet of Things and real-time streaming data analytics is going to be huge in the next couple of years.
And it's got to be easy. I know a gentleman who has a PhD in computer science. He's the assistant provost at a university in Maryland, and he tried to put a Nest thermometer in his house. He got so frustrated, he went back to the original one. He said, Nest is just too hard. And so, you know, the best laid plans, I mean, if it's not easy to use, then we'll just, hey, the people go back to the earlier stuff.
Yeah, you're right. And so these things, you know, back to that idea of democratizing access to the data, we want to make sure that just like that Nest thermometer in consumers, when we have real-time streaming analytics that a business owner or a government program manager or a deputy undersecretary can easily understand the visualized data that's coming out of those systems and not have to go consult the team of PhDs and cost him half a day to make sense of what he's looking at. You're exactly right. And so that's where we're going. The whole field is going in that direction, making that data available to the problem solver, not just the data scientist that works for the problem solver.
That's great. Thank you very much for the interview here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest was Steve Bennett, Principal Product Marketing Consultant for the government for SaaS. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, John. It was great.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.